IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Shooting Space. Thank you for tuning in. I'm back with another exciting episode, another great conversation in my summer series. I'm fresh from my trip to Europe, where I was playing in Belgium and the Netherlands with some really great teammates that I'll have on later in the summer series as well. But today I have a really, really special guest who has an amazing story. Amy Lazor has been someone I followed for so long since the inception of my Twitter and had some really great conversations with. So I wanted to bring her and talk a little bit about the game of lacrosse, the history that it has, and the connection that she and her family have had with the game since forever. So Amy, thank you so much for joining me. If you wouldn't mind giving maybe a little introduction of who you are and how you're involved in lacrosse.
Yes, hi. My name is Amy Lazor. I'm from the Akwesasne Mohawk Reserve in upstate New York. And my daughters have been involved in the game for about 10 years, starting off as youth players. And but my family has been involved as spectators, supporters. My uncles played, and we just would follow them and support them and always cheer for whatever team they were on. It was always like the biggest event happening in our community was when they were playing, along with my brothers as they got older. And then, you know, it was just it's just a community thing where you just go to watch. And And if you can't watch, you somehow figure out a way to support them, meaning help out with the fundraising, you know, attend their events that they're trying to get together so they can go across the country or whatever tournament they're trying to get to.
Definitely, definitely. That's awesome. So obviously immersed in the game. And so for some listeners that may not know, the history of women's lacrosse is actually a little more involved than what you'll find when you Google. So just doing some research on the women's game, you know, you Google it, and on Wikipedia, there comes up the story about, you know, in 1890, someone, you know, had brought the game to a school in.
There was only like softball and basketball, that type of sports organizations, and to have a chance to play lacrosse, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, we are doing this. And so I called up my friends that were putting it together and said, you know, whatever I need to do, I'll get my girls there. And it didn't quite work out in the beginning because they just didn't have the support. So my girls joined the boys' field that year. They were probably 7 and 8 years old. They played a season of boys' field, and I knew then I'd had to do whatever it took to get them into the girls' game because it's a totally different game. And I really, really wanted that here, even though it was still, you know, 10 years ago, it was still a pretty remote idea. It wasn't as big as it is now, but I was willing to do whatever it took to get it going here.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so that's a story I wanted to draw out. Maybe for people listening, can you explain a little bit more why there weren't any girls lacrosse, women's lacrosse programs, and maybe also why you didn't have the chance to play when you were growing up?
Well, I grew up in the 70s, and the factories that made the wooden sticks, like, it was huge here where I lived. A lot of the sticks were made, people were employed in the factories, and the sticks were made and shipped out. And because they're traditional wooden sticks, there's a belief amongst the Haudenosaunee people that there's a power in the stick. So a kid is born, they're given their first stick, a boy, he's given a stick. As he gets older, he gets a bigger stick. And the more times they touch that stick, the power grows in the stick. So some of these boys actually take their stick right with them, and it stays in their bed when they sleep. It's like with them, and you see them walking, and they'd have it everywhere. They have their stick with them. And girls were forbidden to touch them because there was this belief that the power in the stick, it's called a renda, that the girls would steal that power, and then the stick would be rendered useless. So, and it was just the way it was. You didn't question it a lot because you kind of get scolded for questioning it. It was just like, that's just how it is. You know, that's how it's always been. Don't touch the sticks. You can't play because there's no sticks for you to play. And then, of course, in 82, 83, I started to hear more about these plastic sticks that came out. And I never got a chance to see one until when I was in high school. My cousin had went away to prep school in Massachusetts. And when she got there as a grade 9, she was like so excited because she's like, there's a girls team here and they've got those Tupperware sticks. Like they have the plastic sticks and they're allowed to play and there's a whole team of girls. And it was just like, and I remember feeling like so happy for her and just like, wow, this is amazing. And then the game never even got anywhere remotely to us until, I want to say 2001, when the grassroots community Akwesasne attack, it had a boys program going and they wanted to add girls. So the moms that got together and made that happen, that's how the game really took root here, the women's game. So it's really only been a decade, not even a decade.
Wow. Yeah, that's so interesting to hear. Because, you know, thinking back to even me playing, I didn't even know it was a possibility that someone could say, oh, no, like women or girls don't play lacrosse. It was just, oh, this new sport that my friends play and I'm going to pick it up and I'm going to join in. And I think that's the origin story for a lot of us that have picked up sticks and begun to play. But yet there are other counterparts that are also playing it, have kind of this cultural history and background that they're maybe having to push up against. So did you face any, not necessarily backlash, but maybe just some questions about whether or not you were doing the right thing by starting a team for your girls?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. It wasn't too out of control. It was more or less like, you know, the kid would come back to practice after they went home and their family knows they're playing, and it'd be like, well, my auntie or my duda, who is a grandmother, is telling me I shouldn't be doing this and I don't know what to do. And I knew that it's almost like a religious choice. You know, if you people who are traditional and they're fiercely traditional and they solemnly stick to the way of life, they're kind of like torn because they see the happiness that their child has by playing, but yet at the same time, it's not allowed. So I would just tell them that it's okay. You know, the game, it will always be here for you. Someday they'll understand that you want to play and you can come back anytime. Like, it wasn't like, you know, me feeling bad, oh, you can't play. I tried my hardest not to give a feeling to add to the girls' already kind of sadness about it. It was always like, no problem, just whenever you're ready, and it'll always be here for you, and we'll be here for you. And I just left it at that, because I didn't want anyone to be like, you know, pointing fingers at us and blaming us for this problem that, well, some people thought it was a problem, but it wasn't. It was more or less, I thought in my mind, once they see that these girls, you know, what it's doing for them and how happy it makes them, and they're becoming physically fit and they're on a team and they're working together and they're being like taught time management and being responsible with their gear. And I just thought eventually they're just going to see it, that it is a great thing. I mean, especially not just because it's a sport. It's not just about being physical and active and whatnot. But you add that extra, okay, this game is a Haudenosaunee tradition. This belongs to our people, and it's been given to the world, shared with the world. It's like a gift. And it's kind of like, what other sport can you even remotely say that about? You know what I mean? So then you add that. And so then I had just hoped that there would be more support. And over the years, it just grew, not by leaps and bounds. It was kind of a long process, but it's gotten to the point where I feel it's, I don't know of anyone that's not keeping their kid from playing now. I honestly can say that I don't. I mean, maybe there are, maybe I just don't see them. But I can honestly say I don't know anybody who is purposely keeping their kid from playing because of that belief. And just like, for instance, just last night, my girls were invited to go to the Junior B Indians game, which is the men's box lacrosse, you know, the boys that are age 19, 20, you know, the most popular games to go watch are these kids, right? So they got invited to come and to be honored because they won a championship in Maryland last weekend. And for the crowd to be like, okay, these girls play and they're doing things that, you know, any lacrosse player dreams of, taking your team and not just going down the road an hour or two in New York State, but actually going to Maryland, which is almost like the holy grail of lacrosse, right? That's where the toughest competition is. There's no doubt about it. That's where it is. So you want to test, and these girls wanted to test themselves. Like, can we really compete at that level? So I was like, okay, we can do this. So last winter, Danielle Kirk from NXT, she reached out to me and was like, have you ever thought about bringing your girls to Maryland? And it was kind of like, it was just so out of reach. Like, first of all, that's really far. And I know it's super expensive. And that's asking a lot of families to, you know. But because she had asked me when there was snow on the ground, I thought, okay, let's start talking about it now. Let's start planning it. You know, instead of maybe spring break, how about we don't do spring break at the beach and everyone just goes to Maryland and hangs out there. So it was kind of like that. And so we went, and then when the girls going undefeated against teams from Ohio and Maryland and, you know, Florida, it was kind of like exciting that, okay, girls, you can do this.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I feel like there's almost like a full circle, a full circle moment for that, from going, you know, from a place where the girls didn't have the support and weren't really encouraged to play, encouraged to touch the sticks, to now being honored at, you know, one of the best, most popular events in your region, and being honored alongside their male counterparts. I think that's amazing. And I think something you mentioned that I also was curious about is kind of the barriers to entering the game. So something that I've been seeing on Twitter a lot is some U19 teams from other countries are kind of not able to really raise money as quickly, and we've had a team had to drop out of attending the U19s because of the cost of playing. So what are some ways that you've been able to kind of mitigate those costs and bring your teams to these showcases, to these events?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with the planning. It always goes back to the basics. Everyone has to eat. And a lot of people work in the community and they want to order out. So we offer cooked food, prepared, you know, traditional recipes, or just a popular dish that is exclusive to Akuzase, meaning like the Indian tacos, or the traditional meals, which is native hash, corn, squash, that type of thing. And it's almost like people get excited because that's something that they normally would get when it's a holiday or a special event. So it's kind of like, it's almost like you don't have to wait for the powwow or the wedding. You can just buy it off these kids who are making it. Well, not the kids, but the families that are cooking it for a fundraiser. So that's always a big draw. And we also did, for this World Cup, the U19s, we did a t-shirt drive, meaning we took orders for custom shirts that have Team Haudenosaunee. You chose your color, purple or white, your size, and the order goes in. It went in, and all the shirts are being delivered on Monday. And everyone who pre-ordered gets their shirt, and it's almost going to be like a status symbol, because they, as soon as I shut the orders, I have so many other people requesting it. It's like, I'm sorry, the order went in, but I did order extra. I'll put your name on a list and I will offer it to you if I have
if I have it available. So I have like a waiting list on these shirts, which is cool because they're not going to be made again. So, and everyone has to buy clothes. So you might as well buy something that, you know, shows your pride and support the team. And I mean, people from around the country were contacting me through Twitter and through Instagram to buy a shirt, and I'm going to ship them out. So I thought that was a really cool idea. One of the lacrosse dads from Seneca, Dave Santana, that was his idea, and I think it was pretty good.
Yeah, that's great. It's been awesome seeing all the teams, you know, working hard to get to the U19s and seeing the community rally around them. So when was the first inaugural Haudenosaunee women's U19 team?
Well, I know the women's team they had a tryout back in 1988, because I remember, like I told you, my cousin who had went to prep school, and she did so well. I mean, she became All-American by the time she was senior, and she wanted to try out for the women's Haudenosaunee team. So she went to Syracuse for the tryout, and that was that infamous incident where the Onondaga Nation, some of the clan mothers had found out that there was a tryout going on at a high school nearby, and they went there and they laid down on the field and said, nobody is going to try out and no team, no Haudenosaunee women are going to be playing this game. So it was kind of like put aside. Everyone was just kind of like, we can't go against them. I mean, they're our elders. They're telling us we can't. So there was no tryout that year. They didn't put a team in. And I don't think they did the U19 girls until it was probably like 2006, maybe 2007, when they went to Poland. It was in Poland that year. I'll have to look it up for sure, because they didn't have the U19 until then. And that they did a lot of fundraising then. There was a lot more help money wise because it was like, bigger community funds at that time where you could apply. And there was only about 3 girls from Akwesasne that went. And I'm trying to remember. I just don't know the dates for sure.
Yeah, no problem. I was just curious about the history. And wow, that anecdote about the clan mothers lying on the field reminds me very much of my grandmother. I feel like that's something she or my great-grandmothers would do. So can definitely see that. It's funny to look back and tell those stories, but really seeing how far you've come. So with the national teams especially, you know, we saw headlines in the past about issues with passports traveling to other nations to play. For those that don't know, your daughters have been involved with the Haudenosaunee team and have played, you know, getting ready to play at the highest level now at the Division I level. How has their journey been in pursuing their dreams to play not only in college but also for their national team?
I think it's been great. Like, they were, when we first got involved with the national team, it was back in preparation for the 2015 in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to the tryouts. They're both very young. At that time, they were probably 13 and 14 years old. They made the team, and they were both pretty happy because they worked really hard. They really had to show their stuff. And it was not even a couple weeks into after they had announced the rosters that we got the call from Reggie Thorpe. He was the coach for the team, and he just basically asked to speak to Mirabella, my 13-year-old, to tell her that, unfortunately, because she's not going to be 15 at the start of the tournament, she is not able to play. And it was kind of devastating for her. But, I mean, she's so young, and she, at that time, she didn't even understand the enormity of her making a U19 team to play in an international level. But she held a grudge for a while about it, but then she realized, you know what, Jacelyn's going to be old enough. I support her. She's going to do it. It's going to be great. And we did a lot of work fundraising and getting ready for that. And the girls were all set. They were all going. It was about maybe 2 weeks before they were to leave. the British government just could not give them the okay that they, or the 100% guarantee that they were going to be able to get into the UK with their Haudenosaunee passports. And they really wanted them to just go out and get a US passport or a Canadian, depending on which side of the border they lived on. But it was kind of like going against the whole integrity of it, like going there representing your nation. You can't just, oh, I'm just going to get a U.S. passport. Even though we do live on, you know, we live within the boundaries of the United States, but our territories are not considered part of the U.S. We're considered part of the Haudenosaunee territories, which are on both sides of the border. So it's kind of like, it was a really hard decision for the organization to make, but they did that withdrawal. And now because of that withdrawal, back in 2015, for this year's games, they're dropped down to like the lowest pool because they were considered like a forfeiture. So now when they go, they have to be, you know, they're lower ranked, obviously, because it's always based on your last.
Right, your performance the last
tournament. Performance, yeah. Right. So it's just kind of one of those things, stumbling block. I say, you know, flip it over and stand on it and go and just move on to the next one. They can't let that affect them. They just have to move past it.
Right, yeah, absolutely. And that's a great show of, you know, facing adversity, but also standing strong. And per my understanding of the rules for the World Federation is the passport that you use to enter into the host country is who you have to play for. So would that have meant that if they had entered with U.S. or Canadian passports, the players would have had to play for either of those nations and couldn't wear... and play for the Haudenosaunee team?
Pretty much, yeah. They would be considered entering in on another country's passport. And that just goes against the whole principle. And yeah, and the men had been through this for so much longer and so many occurrences that it was kind of like their progress and their work, we would just be dismissing it. And we had to just stick to our guns, even though we lost a lot of money. I mean, non-refundable plane tickets for a lot of people, a lot of parents, myself included, deposits on lodging, never going to get that back. You know, and it's just like you feel angry and you feel disappointed, but and when you look at the bigger picture, it's like, you know what? It's just part of the history now. We were denied. We were denied because of who we are. And we can't change it. We just have to make people understand that we're not going to change what we believe in when it comes to our identity. So we just have to, back down and start over and work on the next one. And the next one came 2 years later with the women in Surrey, England. And that was pretty amazing because we thought the girls were still too young, meaning they were 16 and 17 years old then. And but they were invited to the tryout. They enjoyed it, and they really showed their stuff and showed that how much they really wanted to be there. And they just they gave 110% whenever they were there, and the coaches just saw it, and they just said, you know what, we're gonna include them. And they were put on the roster, and I went with them. I went for the 10 days that they were over in England, and it was a great experience. I went as a volunteer because I wanted to be able to see a lot of games, and it was a great thing. I met a lot of cool people, and I really enjoyed that. And now with this year, it being right here in Peterborough, which to me is pretty much the closest we'll ever get to hosting it. You know what I'm saying? Even though it's not us, it's Canada. But it's a real blessing for it to be here. And we don't have to worry about the huge travel expenses. It was just basically just, I mean, I could drive there and I probably will. I'm already picturing it. I'm going to drive there and drive back because I have to work the next day. But I'm going to do that one day that broke. But then on the weekend, I'm going to get there and I'm going to be there for the whole 7 days because I have my younger daughter playing for Team Israel on the U15, which was something that she had been offered a couple months ago. And we were like, wow, you know, awesome. Gianna will be able to get down there and she will be able to play.
Yeah.
Alongside of her sisters in the festival.
That's amazing. So your daughters are immersed in the national team cultures. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Really, really cool to be part of. And yeah, I think that what I've taken as a lesson from all of these moments of adversity that the Haudenosaunee teams have faced is just the strength in identity and in remaining true to your identity. I saw different tweets and different comments saying, oh, well, why don't they just play for USA or why don't they just play for Canada? And to see the conviction and the stance of, well, this is who I am. Like, this is who I'm going to represent. And no matter what that costs, I want to wear the jersey that most truly represents who I am. That was the message I saw in it. I think that's so powerful. And in that same token, it's sad that that was even an issue. It's sad that the passports were an issue for the nation that, or for the people that created the game. That's kind of the thing I always come back to when things like this happen, is like, how is this possible? We wouldn't have lacrosse without this team. But like, they're the ones that are struggling to get there. It's unfair.
No, I know. And sometimes, you know, we get discouraged a bit. And like, just recently, I got pretty discouraged. We were packing up and leaving to go to an event. The Haudenosaunee girls were all getting together and playing at an event at SUNY Albany. And I get home from work and I'm packing up the stuff. And I'm just like, I didn't know where we were going to stay. I wasn't mentally prepared to make that drive. And then I thought about how I had to go and get money out of the bank because the fees were due and whatnot. And I'm just like, Mimi's just watching me. And she's like, what's wrong? What's wrong with you? You're not yourself. And I'm like, I just don't know. Why am I so stressed? Why are we doing this again? I forgot. Why are we doing this? And then she gave me a speech that sounded like something I would say. So thank God for her listening to me all those years about, you know, doing it for the kids that don't play yet, giving them something to look forward to, showing them that we can always find a way and get there and nothing can stop us. And so she just gave me like everything that I used to always say to them when I was trying to encourage them to go to the tryout, that you are good enough and we need to send the best players possible. And if someone decides to just not try out, even though they're a great player, because they just don't believe in themselves or they just choose another path, it's kind of like, you know, if we don't send our best, how are we ever going to keep this going for the next seven right. generations?
Yeah,
you know,
or absolutely.
The future.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I guess my next question then would be, you know, what are you seeing as your kind of vision for the next crop of great lacrosse players? I know you have one daughter who, I can't remember exactly how old she is, but she's kind of the youngest of the bunch and is tiny, but just crushes lacrosse, is playing and being pulled up on all these teams and things. So what's the landscape you want for her in terms of opportunities to play?
Well, I see her enthusiasm. She's always very prepared, and she's so thrilled when someone calls her up and says, can you be here in the morning? We need you. You're a great defender. We need you to travel over here. I mean, I drove her to Maryland a few weeks ago to play on a Rochester-based team, and they had heard that she was a really good defender, and we went there, and she did amazing. And some of the parents that we faced, I'm talking to them on the sidelines and they just couldn't believe it. They're like, you've never played with this team before, your daughter. You've never, and you're playing with them today and you've traveled all this way. What, you know, why would you do that? And it's like, well, why wouldn't I? It's a real privilege. And to see her wanting to do it almost like pretty much more than anything, it's like, of course I'm going to do whatever I can to get her here and get her that experience. And she's probably made the most progress, has progressed faster than our other daughters, because she's always been so immersed in it, and the talk and the language and just the films and at the sidelines. I mean, she grew up on the sidelines, and it wasn't like she ever complained or said, I'm sick of this, or I just want to go home. It was like more like she wanted to be there too. So, and to So I see that down the road, she'll definitely, you know, emulate to be a caliber player to make a Haudenosaunee squad. I believe that. I really do. And I also have a 13-year-old daughter who is a great player. She was part of that Crab Cake Championship down in Maryland last weekend. It was a modified 2023, right? 2023. She's actually a 24, but our kids playing up, that's just how it is. Like today, Azalea played for a grade 5-6 team, right? Yeah, and she's a fourth grader, so it's just the way it is. It's kind of like the way we have to operate it because we always had so little players to pick from that we would just move kids up that wanted to train and wanted more. So.
Right. Yeah, and so, you know, two of your daughters are now heading to play, you know, at Virginia Tech and at Dartmouth, which, I mean, great schools, great educations, great programs. You know, what do you think are the biggest lessons that they're going to take with them onto the next level, especially having kind of become legends in their own rights with the progress that they've made and putting their teams on the map?
Well, I think what I'm most proud of is them being able to stay humble and not let it get to their head, because they've been through some setbacks. They've been through some injuries. They've gone through, you know, issues with, you know, friendships being strained because they have to dedicate so much time to their training and their traveling and going to school away. I mean, they didn't go to high school here. They went away to prep school to prepare for, you know, a D1 college career. So they've been through a lot more than most teenagers or even most teenage girls that just play lacrosse anywhere, really, because they had to live away from home. And I'm just really proud of them for not, you know, flaking out, more or less. You know, because they could easily say, I've had enough, I'm exhausted, I don't want to do this, you know, I miss my friends, or I miss my boyfriend, I just want to do this. And they've never done that. And I'm really proud that they're so mentally tough, you know, and they never make anyone else feel bad for not doing what they're doing. If anything, they're always like giving encouragement and trying to help. Like, they're probably our greatest coaches for these kids other than their dad. You know, those kids come here, the kids train. We have about 60 kids that come here to our house and they train on the lacrosse field. And Jaislyn and Mimi are just like such great teachers. And that's, I think, that's what makes me really proud too, is they're able to retain that knowledge and they put it out there for these young kids. They break it down for them to understand because they spent the last 2 years at IMG being educated and coached by, you know, a lot of highly educated lacrosse IQ teachers that they're able to turn around and teach these young girls.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's the most wonderful part of the story and why I wanted to share it was your girls have really taken something so beautiful from their culture and shown that lacrosse can be for women and women can succeed and you know, just teaching the next generation to play. I'm sure a lot of people listening, have seen Keepers of the Game, the documentary about the Salmon River High School team, which I think your daughters played on for 2 seasons. One season. And yeah, so stories like that, if you haven't seen Keepers of the Game, for those listening, check it out. It's fantastic. But I just love those stories of strength and of us helping each other, lifting each other up. So I'm so excited to see what your daughters do next and at the college level. And I love keeping up with all your involvement. So please keep it up and thank you for inspiring us all to reach for our greatness.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad that the story might be to help a young girl deciding if she wants to play or keep playing, because a lot of times a young girl in the United States or Canada or anywhere in the world, they will have a club that's literally down the street from them, and they have parents willing to drive them and pay their tuitions. And it's almost like, because it's so easy, it's easier for them to just walk away and say, well, I'm kind of bored with this and I just want to do something else. Where you look at girls that live in Akuzesne, which is geographically challenged when it comes to lacrosse, meaning the women's game. The men's game is all day long here, like anywhere you turn. But the women's game is very isolated. And for us to be able to offer that to people, and now we have families that drive an hour, some 2 hours away from here, they drive to Akuzesne to learn lacrosse from us. So, and you know, from my husband John and our girls, and it's just really like, it's almost like a dream. Like you fantasize about it, and then it comes true, and it's just like, wow. And I want the girls listening and all the families listening that love the game, just know that they really need to count their blessings, that they're permitted to play and they have access to play, and keep growing it and sharing it. Whatever's taught to you, pass it on, because it's a gift, and that gift gets stronger every time it's passed on.
That's a wonderful message, and it sums up all the feelings that I have of just celebrating the game and enjoying it, and not letting ourselves get too stressed out if, you know, points aren't what we want them to be or we're not progressing as fast, but to just be so thankful that we can go to the store and pick up a stick or call up our friends and play, go to tournaments and play, you know. It humbled me so much being able to travel and play the game and play with players from all over Europe and at different levels. It's just, I'm so thankful and I'm so grateful. And yeah, I'm very lucky to be part of this game. So thank you again, Amy, for joining me on Shooting Space. And for those that, you know, are supporting us, be sure to keep an eye on the Haudenosaunee team at the U19 Worlds and support all the wonderful players that will be playing.
Great. Well, absolutely. Thank you.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.